Good afternoon, everybody. I want to thank you all for inviting me out here to speak on interpreting gypsum in soils or gypsum in soils for land use. I kind of forgot to put that critical little phrase in there for land use, because interpretations, at least from my perspective, really, unless you have a land use in mind, you really can't interpret it from a, you know, land use point of view. And so we'll just move right along here. I was kind of surprised how that the worldwide distribution of gypsum containing soils, this is an old FAO thing from 1990, but you can see there are all kinds of, a lot of acreage or kilometers, square kilometers of gypsum affected soils in the world. I guess not really all that surprising, because I know there's a lot of deserts and things like that. I found this map, gypsum and anhydrite and salt in the United States, where this guy was looking to at depth too, so that's where you get these places here. There's a lot of brines in northwestern Pennsylvania, northern Pennsylvania. It's actually showing some karst for features up here in the Mohawk Valley. I'm not sure we've ever really talked about those in soil survey since in terms of gypsum. And of course, the big places we have here. Areas in the United States that have gypsum in the bedrock or anhydrite, some evaporate basins in the bedrock strata somewhere. Pretty extensive. I was kind of surprised. The objectives for today's talk, we want to recognize the problem soils. We want to know how to recognize them, or actually the objectives for the task force, the interpretations section of the task force. We want to establish a framework of interpretive criteria and quantify the degree of limitation to land use. And several of the previous speakers, Susan, has mentioned that, you know, NASIS, that word, nobody knows what that means. It's the Soil Survey Database. And interpretations, well, we have a system within the database of rating soils for how limited or how suitable they are for land use. And so we use the data that's in the database to make these ratings. So that gets us a little bit of a problem, because with gypsum, as you try to analyze it to find out what the data would be, the soil changes. You know, it's the quintessential dynamic soil property. The very things you want to, you know, you want to find out about, you change that property in the effort of trying to find out what it is. And so that presents some challenges for interpretations, for just the mechanics of interpretations. Okay, so we'll just keep on moseying along with this. We've kind of decided the limiting effects of gypsum are primarily subsidence. Certainly between subsidence and corrosion, those are the two big ones. And we heard earlier today about corrosion. I think it was Brenda talking about corrosion, $2 billion worth of damage due to corrosion. So that's an important civil engineering property, this corrosion. Also piping, if you want to have a dam, you can't have gypsum in the soil or the water will push right through it. Heaving, we've talked about heave from gypsum. And we also talked about dust, the ability of these things to generate PM 2.5 and PM 10. And there could be more limiting effects, but that's what we've talked about so far, is the five of them there. And we'll talk about those in turn here as we move along today. Talk about subsidence, because there's not too many things more dramatic than seeing your house falling into a hole in the ground. Subsidence is it catches your attention. And this particular picture, I have the credits farther down in at the end, but this picture, this is around Las Vegas. This is in England, northern England. But I like the subsidence so much we had to put some more in. These are from Spain. There's a roadway falling into a hole, and you can see the building being undermined here, and some irrigation structures also getting some corrosion as well as subsidence. So it's quite a civil engineering problem. to deal with gypsum, not only in the soils, but also in the bedrock. And that's one of the things where we can kind of get a handle of that in the database by looking at the parent material in the database. It might not be quite exactly, cricket or kosher, if you will, but because it's not soil, it's a soil database, but we have bedrock information in it. So we can glean whatever information we can out of that. The interpretive model that Kathy Seibold has kind of worked on and I've worked a little bit with assumes a differential subsidence and the dissolution of all the gypsum in the profile. It's just, the basic assumptions. And for infrastructure like a building, there's in the subsidence literature, they have a standard wall. Everything for civil engineers has to be standard. Well, they have a standard wall. It's 10 meters long. And if the predicted subsidence is less than 3 centimeters, they think, well, that's not limited. So if 3 centimeters over, 10 meters, that's not a whole lot. 3 to 18, greater than 18, severely limited. And that's the kind of terminology that we use in the soil interpretations arena. Usually we talk in terms of a limitation because, you might have a soil that has one thing that's not conducive to your use. That's the one thing that limits that soil. It's harder to talk in terms of potentials because then you have to deal with a lot more variables. With limitations, we only need that one variable to be limiting, and we can kick out a soil based on that. So that's subsidence. I've developed a subsidence subrule for gypsum, subsidence due to gypsum that occurs in dwellings with basements, dwellings without basements, small commercial buildings, roads and streets, and unpaved local roads and streets. Basically, any kind of situation where if there was differential subsidence, that infrastructure would be damaged. And we have talk about some corrosion a little bit. There's pictures from Greg here. You can see how, particularly the fence post, things are corroded. Corrosion, as we mentioned before, a $2 billion problem in the United States. Corrosion of concrete and steel. In some sources, just the very presence of gypsum as low as 2%. And you usually assume that the water is present due to altered hydrology, because whenever man gets to working on a landscape, the first thing we do is we dig a hole, we put in a road, we alter the hydrology. There could be other factors, perhaps other variables, but perhaps not, because I know Paul Fennell has been working a lot with corrosion of concrete and steel, and so we're getting a handle on this one. You have to remember, too, that I wrote the talk about a month ago, just getting ready, and we're working fast enough that things that in the talk are already obsolete. Piping parameters for gypsum content, these are from the soil mechanics lab. Less than 5%, they consider it not limited. 5 to 25%, somewhat limited. Greater than 25%, severely limited. They seem a little high to me, but that's, I think, the current criteria. And that's piping subrule would end up in water management interpretations, like if you're trying to have an embankment or a dam, something like that. Something where you want a structure where you want to hold water back. Heaving, well, actually, we have addressed that some by now, but crystal growth, heaving when you have adding the lime to the expansive soils that have gypsum in them really causing a lot of expansion. And a heaving subrule being inserted into any interpretation that deals with infrastructure. So we'd have heaving in with dwellings with basements and roads and streets and those kinds of interpretations. We've talked about dust already today. And so I developed a subrule, a submodel, if you will, that includes gypsum content as a component. And starting out at 2% is not being limited. More than 15% gypsum, then just if you were to use this material to build a road, with the common assumptions of traffic on it, then there would be a considerable dust problem with that. And the dust subrule ends up in an unpaved local roads and streets, which is kind of similar to like a forestry haul road, but it's not in the woods. There's camp areas, paths and trails, picnic areas, anything that you disturb the soil with and you know, work the soil and create dust. What about on-lot effluent disposal? You know, that's something that we've been trying to get some information on. Local regulations, are there systems that work? I don't know. I anticipate, though, there will be more development in these areas simply because it's undeveloped area and so people will go there. There's a reference and some sources that somebody wanted me to put in there. And this is what we're trying to avoid having happening to us.